Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since fog, and you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to wellness mentor Sophia, founder of Single Most Important Person. Well, we'll be discussing the topic of self-compassion. Sophia, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's nice to speak to you, and thank you for having me on the show, and hello to everyone listening in. It's nice to be here.
Pleasure to have you on the show. Sophia, talk to us a bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Okay, yes. Yeah. So in terms of my background, I got into the wellness and lifestyle arena going back to 2010. So I just came out of a long-term relationship, and it's like when you go through big changes in life, you know, for example, like grief, which I experienced last year, it's almost like you feel like you're starting, in a place you are. Ask questions like, who am I? And I started going to workshops, reading books, and I started writing about different lifestyle topics. And then before I knew it, I was, getting my inbox by editors saying, oh, we like this lifestyle and mental wellness work you're doing. And that's how it kind of like began in terms of starting my blog, which was Sophia World, where I was talking about this lifestyle stuff from my point of view. And that's how it really began.
Fantastic. Why do we need self-compassion in contrast to themes that may be buzzed about in the wellness world, like self-love?
Yes, the reason why to start there, self-love is useful to, in terms of every day, and you've got to have a self, like self-care, for example. But in terms of self-compassion, I think that it's a really important theme which we should embrace in our day-to-day life, because face it, life is like a cycle. It's like ups and downs. You go through different things. You one day you feel up, and then one day you might feel down. And then on top of that, in terms of the world we're living in the past 20 years, we're through the digital age where we've got the internet, we've got social media. So everything's kind of like more instant. So we're like bombarded with different information. We're influenced not just by print anymore, like magazines. So when I was growing up, you had like Just 17, and every week you go, okay, what's happening? What's the latest trends? But now we have this on social media, and the impact could be instant. And I thought about, when I was coming onto this show, that self-compassion is a good topic, because I also see online in terms of Facebook, people making posts. And I've noticed that sometimes you see negativity online. And when I talk about negativity, I'm talking about posts or videos where it's almost like people are trying to take away the fact that we are an actual fact human being. So I call it like a dehumanization. And sometimes I see posts where there's a bit of shaming because a person was shown vulnerability. And this is why I think that self-compassion is really important to have, because we have, we have our mind, we have different thoughts going through, and commonly it might be negative self-talk, doubts going through, or we might be hard on ourselves. I experienced that myself too as well. And I find that words are very powerful. And often you hear people say, like, as you said, Gavin, talk about self-love. And then a lot of people sometimes find that really difficult. What does it mean, self-love, to me? Does it mean me pampering myself, or going in a mirror and saying affirmations, I love you? And I could talk a little bit about affirmations a bit later on in the show about my thoughts on that, because I think people get confused in terms of what an affirmation is. So I think that, self-compassion is needed, because we sometimes we have that program in our mind where we might beat ourselves up or take on a statement which someone said. So for example, if I use myself as an example, I don't mind sharing it. Over the weekend, there was minding my own business, and then someone asked me a personal question, and I shared something back. And then what she did is she kind of like projected her negativity on me. And I thought, like, wow, where does this come from? And then I had a moment of shock. And then with my knowledge of self-awareness and how the world works, I realized as I was going through this, you know what she said is, you know, her fault, you know, it's her stuff, not my stuff. And I, you know, took that angle of having self-compassion. So that's why I think self-compassion is needed.
Absolutely. What inspired you to develop the SIP methodology? And if we can also talk a bit about that as well, and how does it relate to self-compassion?
Okay, so how I came up with single important person method was going back to around, I think it was maybe 2012 or 2015, I was in a supermarket and I saw VIP. So I think they were like celebrating sports people. And then it clicked to me that why is it that a lot of times in society that we, you know, it's been going from the dawn of time where people have idolization, although some religions forbid it. We like look outside and think, wow, look at what that person's doing. They're very special. And it's almost like we forget that, you know, we're also an individual too with needs too as well. We're just important. We're all human beings. We have commonalities. We have similar needs, like wanting to have togetherness, you know, want love, etc. So that's how single important person started, in terms of remembering that it's important to look after our needs, especially in a society where the word self sometimes could have negative connotations, like, for example, the word selfish, and it's all to do with how we are programmed in society. So when if I ask you what you think of the word selfish, I don't know what it'll be, you know, Gavin, but, you know, with some people they might say, oh, putting your needs, you know, before someone else in a negative type of way. But I have an answer to that, which could be helpful, you know, for the listeners out there, is that when it comes to making a decision, use the phrase, for example, I choose me. And the reason why I say I choose me is because it then makes it more simpler. So say, for example, if you have a dilemma and let's say, for example, you've been offered a job and then you realize, you know, the location's not right, or, you know, you might have less time with your family and it's important to have that connection. So by choosing me and not, you know, trying to please, like the employer, for example, it makes it easier to make that decision. Or, for example, if you, you know, take care of your needs. So, for example, if you have that mini break, for example, then you feel more balanced and you're not taking out frustrations out on your children. I'm just using that as a hypothetical. So when you look at that phrasing of it, I choose me, it doesn't sound too bad, doesn't it? You know, rather using a word, you know, I'm going to put my needs first, which might come across as negative.
Can you explain the green room concept and how it contributes to practicing self-compassion?
Okay, so the green room concept is one which I came up with, and I was kind of like inspired because I'm a writer too as well. So I'm a, you know, storyteller. And I had this idea about how when people are making films or TV shows, sometimes they have to have a break in between scenes. And if we look about life, life is like a series of chapters and scenes and experiences. So, for example, like you might go to work, you know, every day, you know, 9 to 5, for example. So you're doing that action all the time. And the green room was a tool to use in terms of reminder that sometimes we need to step away from a situation. So it might be, for example, like that dilemma scenario I just noted, you know, should I take that job, which might take me further away from my family, for example. So with the green room, the aim of it is that it could be like a physical place in your house, like an altar, like your conservatory or your favorite chair. And you could just sit there, have plants around it, for example. And you just take a time out, do something different rather than being in that set situation that you're in, because we all need to take timeouts now and then. And then when we look at common day-to-day ailments, you know, in the last couple of years or maybe 5 years, like burnout, 10 years ago, people didn't talk about burnout being a thing, you know, and then WHO, you know, the organization, you know, came up and said that confirmed there is a thing called burnout. And sometimes in terms of practicality, people might not be able to go on a holiday, you know, go on a weekend, you know, thinking, oh, I feel tired. So by practicing that, that theme of having taken a break in your green room, which to me could be like going for walks. So I love you know, being in nature, and I'm fortunate to live next to a really nice, you know, great park, you know, close to where I live. So I find that when I go on that walk, I'm breathing, and sometimes, you know, without thinking it, I could even come up with solutions. So the green room, in a sense, is a kind of mindfulness technique, in a sense, because you're, you know, you're being more, you know, centered, in a sense, and you're taking yourself away from the situation or dilemma. We all need a break. And I remember when I was growing up as a child, you had to Kit Kat, you know, take a break. Back in the days when I used to watch TV, these days I don't.
I love a Kit Kat once in a while.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, take a break. You remember the slogan?
Yeah.
Have a Kit Kat kind of thing. So yeah, it's like a green room.
Basically, do you think there's something... No, do you think there's too much self-compassion?
I don't think you could have too much self-compassion, because we need to be, going back to what I was saying early on, is we need to have kindness, because if you take off the self in front of these words like self-love, and let's take the example of, you know, for example, I'm going to go a little bit off track here, Gavin, you know, so the
first, that's right.
I'm going to go back a little bit in terms of steps. So when you think about life, say, for example, if I want to, like, you know, move to another country, which I did that years ago, and I didn't really know anyone there. The first thing is that you have to have a sense of confidence to do that. You know, do you agree with me, Gavin? You know,
I do, 100%.
Like that. So that's confidence. Or say, for example, if you're single and you're thinking, okay, I'm ready, I'm open to date someone, and you think about it, okay, how am I going to find someone? Am I going to go on a dating app? But really, before you start looking at that, you need to look at self-love. You know, I was going to ask you that question, Gavin, but I answered it for you. We understand how everything starts from you, you know, in terms of the place. And in terms of what I was saying early on, the way we've been programmed is we look at things from a more external perspective. So a lot of times we have situations where we might be hard on ourselves, but if we have a child, for example, we'd be kind or gentle to that person. Why are we not being kind to ourselves? So that's why I think self-compassion is really important. And I'm going to give another example to a bonus. So last year, I went through double grief. So I lost my mum, who was my last surviving parent. And then also lost a really good friend who is also my collaborator. We worked on creative projects. So that was hard, you know, losing people in a space of 2 months.
Gosh.
And with all of this, with grief, grief affects us in different ways. Sometimes you get people get a delayed grief. But I remember there was a moment, and I've shared this with, you know, other people, in terms of there was a kind of beauty in the grief, because one day I was driving my car, and then all of a sudden I started to think back about my past relationships, love, romantic relationships. I know it's kind of, you know, spontaneous, but it's interesting how your brain works. And I was thinking, wow, you know, this person wasn't really that nice or that element, you know, think about the negative. But then what was beautiful, and probably because, you know, I'm in the wellness and lifestyle, and, you know, I've done, you know, gone through therapy too as well, and I believe in getting help too as well, is I realized that, you know what, you know, this has happened, you know, it wasn't nice at the time, but look, I gained a lesson from this. I gained an insight. And also I was looking at myself from a loving perspective. So I wasn't beating myself up, because we only do what we know, you know, what we knew at the time. And another way to look at it is we come into this world, there's no guidebook, for example, like with you, Gavin. I don't know, was there a manual which came when you were born? When
your parents, I wish. You know? Every day I think about stuff like that.
Yeah. So we don't come with a manual. So, of course, it's like trial and error. That's how I look at things. That's like another framing in terms of life. Like, this, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to experiment. We're going to have, you know, experiences which are going to impact us. So, for example, of our childhood, I know it might sound cliche, but what happens in your childhood, different experiences will have like an impact. You might not realize it at all, in terms of, you know, why do you get defensive, or, you know, like going back to dating. I should have called this the dating hour. I think it's like a good example, but I think it's like a common one, which a lot of people, you know, can relate to in terms of the different types of relationships. So do you see, so by taking the self-compassion aspect, we just think, okay, I'm just learning. Do you see what I mean? And, you know, that's why it's so important to look at things in that way, rather than beating yourself up and saying, oh, I'm a loser in love, or why do I end up in this vicious cycle? So that's why, yeah, that's
absolutely
important.
Absolutely. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Sophia, thank you for that introduction into self-compassion. Your manifesto emphasizes not compromising core values.
Yes.
How does that relate to self-compassion, and how can people identify their core values?
Okay, so that's a really good question, Gavin, in terms of core values. And to start with, core values are like, for example, the example I used early on. So I used the example like how I don't want to work too far from home if I have a family and I got, you know, relationships. So that's a core value. So that'd be like, for example, communication. And it's good to figure out what your core values are. And to let you know that core values are things which could change sometimes. It's a bit like priorities because, you know, we're in, you know, at the time of recording this, we're in September, so we're going into autumn, and, you know, it's a lovely time in terms of looking, you know, doing a reflection in terms of what you do. And core values are things which are going to change. And it could be, and the good thing about knowing what your core values are is that it could be a compass. So, for example, if I share some of my core values include like play, for example, connection is another one, adventure, you know, just to name three of them. So why it's important for me to know what my values are is when it comes to making a decision, then if I feel like it's ticking those three, you know, core values that I listed, I think there's a fourth one, but my mind's gone kind of like blank in terms of what it is, then it makes it easier in terms of making decisions. And sometimes in life where you might feel a bit out of sync or frustrated, a lot of it, most of the times, is actually because there's a conflict with one of your core values. So, for example, like that scenario of moving away from your family and friends, for example, there's a conflict in terms of, you know, my core values. So it's important to know what your core values are. And there's different exercises you can do to do this. It's like, for example, it could be to do with words. And then I would say to keep it simple, whittle it down to maybe three or no more than five core values. Because if you have a long list, then you might forget, you know, we are human. I would forget if I have a list of 10 values. So that's the first part in terms of core values. And if you look at my SIP, I know you can't see everyone, the listeners, you know, in terms of my core values, you know, one of them is, you know, you want to have a juicy, rich life. And I'm also going to give an illustration of that because I think it's no point in me just saying words out there. And people say, what, you know, what is it? What does she link this to, you know, make it relatable. And another one is to do with not feeding yourself with food which is not nourishing. And food, I use as a bigger theme. So when I say nourish myself with healthy food, I'm not only talking about your diet, I'm also talking about things which you read, you know, the people you hang out with, your friends, for example, because that have an impact on you. So, for example, if I take the juice, you know, living a juice rich life, one year, this is during the lockdown, you know, when we're coming out of lockdown, so we were home a lot, you know, during those 2 years, I was, you know, caring for someone, and then I started to feel, you know, the feeling of burnt out because I wasn't prioritizing myself, hence why SIP is important. So I was going against, you know, my principles. And then I decided to go away and work remotely in the beautiful island of Tenerife I was only meant to be there for 3 weeks, but I ended up spending almost 3 months there.
Oh, you're making me jealous. Yeah. So you was working remotely?
I was working remotely for Tenerife.
During COVID?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. No, sorry, not during COVID, but when we were coming out. So that was of 2021.
But that's
so
brilliant. That's brilliant.
I went to Tenerife. I think it's because of the lockdown, you know, maybe. Yeah, I love traveling, by the way, if you don't know it, but, you know.
We know it now.
Yeah, I love traveling. So what happened is, when I was meant to come back to the UK, there was something inside me saying, you know what, I should stay. And it was a really good experience for me, because by staying on the island, I got to have a bit of a reset. At one time, I was working really ridiculous hours, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and working at 6 at night. And then someone who was living, you know, I was living in this co-living place in a really beautiful mansion, and, you know, it's really lovely. And then someone turned around and said to me, I can't believe the hours you're doing. And then I realized, you know, what am I doing? I'm here on a beautiful island, waking up at 6 in the morning and then working to 6 or 7 in the evening. I wasn't going out as much. And then that was like a sign to me to say that I'm compromising my values. I'm not having venture, fun, connection, or having that good balance. So I ended up terminating that project, you know, because I realized the whole idea was not to change scenery, but, you know, to get a better rhythm. And it was one of the best decisions, because I climbed a mountain for the first time. And from climbing that mountain, it made me realize, it was kind of like symbolic. I felt that I really got to understand that phrase, you know, that famous phrase, you know, to climb a mountain. I got it. It is really hard. Because I remember at one time I was thinking of going back, you know, but I did it. But I think that the point, you know, the story in terms of making that decision is, I was going back to my core value in terms of prioritizing myself by, you know, living my life and going on that juicy, fun adventure. And it could be different things. It doesn't have to be going away for 3 months. It could be different things which you can do, interact, choosing yourself. It could be a case, for example, in terms of work, which a lot of us, you know, have to do, unless we're multimillionaires or billionaires, for example, and don't have to work or have assets working for us. And I'm going to stop there. Don't get bored that part. But you know, it's not like an everyday thing we could do, where we could go away for 3 months. So that's why, hence, going back to the green room, it's a useful tool which we could use. So it's like, get know thyself, that sort of like phrase. And life, you know, gives us opportunities to, you know, and this is what's, you know, interesting about when you put in situations, for example, like grief, like I explained, or if a relationship ends, it's like a chance to look at, you know, start a new chapter and, you know, see what you can do in terms of, okay, what is it that I want out of life? What's important to me? And it's normally 3 or 4, you know, big core principles, and once you work into those principles, then it brings so much more ease into your life. And I also have a concept called the age of honesty, where, you know, it talks about being honest with yourself, you know, getting clarity, even in communication with people. It might feel a bit difficult sometimes, but once you say it, it brings so much ease to your life, rather than you know, having stress and, you know, raise anxiety. And then sometimes, you know, we could go down and talk about depression, for example, but I'm not going to go too much into depression.
No, of course. In your experience, what's the relationship between self-compassion and the ability to pursue one's goals and dreams?
Okay, so in terms of self-compassion and fulfilling a person's goal and dreams, is it goes back to what we were saying early on in terms of making a decision. So, for example, I've worked as a contractor for a number of years, you know, doing consulting work. So I've worked on many projects, and I have had a small percentage of projects where I think, hold on a minute, I'm not really happy. It might be to do dynamics or to do with the team, or maybe they might set really, you know, unrealistic timelines. And then when I get to that situation where I think, okay, you know, this is not very good for me. And I remember one time I did have a panic attack, and, you know, I hadn't had a panic attack for years, and I didn't realize it was a panic attack until I went to the doctor. And then when I have that panic attack and I realize it was a result of, you know, work, or how I wasn't, you know, you know, looking at my time or doing it in a good way, which is suitable for me, I realized, going back to that question, I use that phrase, can you guess what it's going to say? I choose me. So I chose myself, and that's using self-compassion. And so I realized that, you know, I don't need to put myself in a situation where I'm given, you know, really unrealistic timelines. And because I have this, you know, this pride in wanting to deliver to a good standard, I felt, no, I can't do that. So there's a link between, you know, self-compassion again coming up, where I choose me. So in a sense, we could say that when we use that phrase to help us make a decision, or when we're weighing up, you know, someone's asked me to do this, then ask that question, you know, I choose me by, you know, not, you know, putting myself in that position which will affect my health, because it's not going to help anyone at all if you get really...
Sophia, do you think it's easy to say, I choose me, when you're going through initially grief of whether you've lost someone or coming to the end of a relationship? Because at that point, it's pretty... Maybe people vary, but from my own experiences, it can be very shocking to lose someone.
Yeah.
So... I don't think it's always easy at the beginning to say, I choose me, when you're going through, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, because I've been using so far examples of everyday type of ones. And of course, you do get shocks like that. So I think the best advice I give is, when you get a big example, like a relationship breaks down, it's sad. It does affect you, because in a sense, it is a form of grief when you think about when a relationship ends, because what happens is, even if you had your ups and downs in a relationship, you had this vision, like, for example, it might be like maybe having children or buying a house together. So that dream ends, and you have to kind of like, you know, grieve over that, of course. So I would say, give yourself, you know, time to process things. Don't make any kind of like big decisions. And it's okay to have your off days and realize, you know what, I might need to retreat a bit from my friends, but it's perfectly fine. I know I've got my support group who I could go to. So I would say, be gentle on yourself, and don't be hard on yourself. And again, you know, being gentle on yourself and letting it process in terms of, you know, the anger, you know, like that cycle, you know, when you go for shock, you know, I can't believe this has happened. It's a bit like, you know, when I lost a friend. You know, I remember, another friend who I lost years ago, it was 2021, yeah, it was 3 years ago. That came as a shock to the friend who I lost last year, because they had terminal cancer. So I knew it was going to happen, you know, so I had a bit of, you know, time or processing that. But when I had that shock news, she's dead, I remember waking up and thinking, you know, is that a dream? And I was crying, you know, for two mornings in a row, because I was still processing it. But then it took me, you know, time to go process it. But that taking time and being gentle myself is another form of self-compassion. One of my friends years ago on Facebook posted this post, and he basically said that when people go through a hard time, people say, you know, some spiritual people say, meditate, meditate, meditate. And I'm not like that. I believe in saying, give yourself more love, give yourself more love. And in a sense, that is self-compassion, because we just need to be more gentle with ourselves. So I do see the link. Do you see the link now, Gavin? You know,
no, I do. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just another phrase. So if a person, you know, is listening and saying, okay, I want to give myself more love, or give myself more love, that's okay, that's fine. Because the whole important thing there in terms of self-compassion is going easy on yourself and realizing that, you know what, I had a bit of a shock, or my relationship's ended, and it's hard, you know, especially, you know, when you're invested in someone, and you know, you share a life, you had that Saturday routine, you know how it's like, how you might clean the house on a Saturday morning, for example, or doing catching up with your errands during a week. So that we're human, and it goes back to that point, you know, again, about how we're human. And that's why I think it's important to have self-compassion, because sometimes what I do not like is when I see people online, I'm not saying everyone's like that, I'm not generalizing, but I do see it now and then, where you get people saying they're spiritual and saying, I'm in the fifth dimension of spirituality, the seventh dimension. So that doesn't affect me, you know, that thing, that human thought of being feeling pain. And, you know, I'm here to say to everyone, you know, if you hear something like that, someone saying to you, I don't connect with that human experience, and I say just run from that person, because we, you know, what are we? We are humans, unless it's an AI or humanoid or something like that you're talking to. It's really ridiculous. And in a way, I see that as a kind of like gaslighting too as well, when people do that, when they try to say, oh, you should just get over it, or, you know. So it's like going, it's a good question you raise, an example you use of, thanks, Gavin, you know, to do with relationships. So it's hard to, you know, say, how do I give myself self-compassion? But I think another way you could phrase it, listeners, is say, okay, you know, this is happening, you know, I feel a bit raw, you know, what can I do? I remember my late mother one time said to one of my friends who's a bit stressed out, oh, go and have a slice of cake. And, you know, when my mum said that to my friend, she laughed. You know, there was a cake in the kitchen, by the way. But, you know, I like the way my mum did that and said, you know, have a slice of cake. Because in a sense, that's like nourishing yourself. And I'm not talking about, you know, overeating, you know, like how sometimes the food is an emotional one, because, yes, you know, we do like to give ourselves comfort. But do you see what I mean, Gavin?
No, in absolutely. Terms
of how you could be kind and gentle to yourself and realize, you know what, you know, I'm going through a bad time, but I'm going to be nice to myself. I'm going to like sit at home, wear my baggy pajamas, you know, feel comfortable. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, do, you know, navigating things, because I think the most important thing in terms of especially mental health is acknowledging that, yes, I feel down, you know what, I don't feel okay. That is really, really important, because when it comes dangerous, or maybe not use the word dangerous, but when it comes to a situation where it might have like a ripple effect, or might, you know, manifest to depression or something a bit, you know, more clinical, it's because, you know, what tends to happen is people brush it underneath the carpet, or, you know, pretend it hasn't happened, because things have a way of catching up with you. You can't hide, you know, from things. So it's Absolutely. Good to like acknowledge, you know what, I'm not feeling that good today, or, you know what, I don't like this toxicity, you know, for example, in the office. And then you just look at the steps backwards, and, you know, so first thing is, number one is acknowledge how you're feeling.
Absolutely. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Sophia, thank you for that as well, but more information around self-compassion and the work you do. You advocate living a rich and juicy life. And I know you've already mentioned this once. How can you embrace this mindset, help individuals be more compassionate towards themselves?
Okay, so living a juicy, rich life. So when I say that word, living a rich, juicy life, what comes to mind, Gavin? I know you're interviewing me, but ask that question.
I suppose people have different definitions of what rich means. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I suppose to have no debt, and be able to pay the bills, put food on the table,
yes,
you know, have a roof over your head, be able to go where you want, when you want.
Yes.
I think there's some key points there. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. The reason why I asked you that question, you know, not to put you in the spot, Gavin.
You did.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
To surprise people. You could tell that I'm a trainer and a teacher. You tell, can't you? You
know, no worries.
You know, I feel honoured when people put me in the spotlight too.
No, I don't mind. It's fine. I deserve it. I put everyone else in the spot.
No, it's okay, Gavin. The reason why I asked you, because I thought, instead of launching into what I commonly find when people use that phrase, is living a juice-rich life doesn't have to necessarily mean, you know, like monetary. I mean, like wealthy, like going on a yacht or travelling first class. It could be things, for example, which are important to you. So, for example, I like art. You know, I'm a writer, so I say I am an artist, and I this past weekend I went to the Portobello Film Festival, which is, you know, lovely, you know, for viewers if you ever want to come into London and attend that festival. And the reason why I point that out is because you could do things in your life which brings joy to you, and it doesn't have to be, you know, a high investment in terms of money. It could be like spending time with friends, or maybe once a month saying, okay, I'm going to explore a different town in the UK, or go to, for example, an exhibition of vintage cars. So I'm using myself as an example. I do like classic cars, by the way. So sometimes I have gone, you know, decided to go, okay, let me go into London because I live, you know, not too far. And see. So that to me is living a rich, juicy life, you know, an example of it in terms of doing things like that. And also it could be to do with having new experiences. So it could be like, for example, tonight I'm going to go to salsa classes for the first time in like ages. I haven't done it in a long time. You know, I'm a little bit apprehensive, but I know it's going to be fun. So it's like, and when you think about fun, it links up to my value. Can remember early on I said about adventure and play, you know, by core values. So it links to that. It has a rich, juicy life. So the point of the rich, juicy life is also about having balance and also dressing, doing things which matter to you, which is in, you know, consistency with your core values. So that's what I mean in terms of living a rich, juicy life. So when you do these things or have these treats, then you don't get to a situation where you feel, oh, I feel really burnt out. I'm not really enjoying life. You know, I'm working all the time. I don't see my friends. Do you see what I mean? So that's what rich, juicy life is. It's like finding joy in different ways, and it can be inexpensive. I think that's the key point which I was, I'm trying to make there, Gavin. And that's why I asked you that question in terms of what do you think about rich, juicy life?
No, of course.
Otherwise, I'm just saying some words together. The same Sophia, what does she mean by that?
Can you share a personal example of how practicing SIP principles has enhanced your own self-compassion?
Yes, it's interesting because I was having a discussion with one of my friends. So to give people a little bit insight, I don't mind sharing sometimes behind the scenes in terms of what I do, you know, in terms of how everything gets there. So I was going through a recent rebrand of my website. So you got Sophia World, and then you got SIP, which is almost could be like a standalone entity. But I was talking to one of my really lovely PR friends. She's wonderful, you know, this lady called Carrie. And, you know, anyway, I've got to stop there, you know, talk about, you know, doing a whole fan, you know, fandom about Carrie. And she's known me for a number of, you know, of years. And when I was going through the branding process on my website, she goes to me, you know what, Sophia, you need to talk about SIP more, because have you noticed of what you do? All roads lead to SIP. Look at that scenario you're in. Look at when you decided to go away for, you know, 3 months. Look at when you decided to leave that project, you know, that SIP. Look at, you know, that, you know, that example when, you know, I was, you know, thinking about all these, you know, past relationships. And then I realized, you know what, you know, I'll go easy myself at SIP. So it kind of like is an undercurrent theme in terms of my life. And sometimes I do it, but I don't even realize I'm doing it until, for example, like my friend Carrie says to me, you know what, you are living, you know, SIP. And SIP is important because even with me, sometimes I forget to follow the SIP, or I might go off a little bit, you know, off the pattern of SIP. But it's these are core good principles to use in terms of, because it's about returning and remembering that, you know, you matter. It's okay to be yourself in a world where, yes, we're bombarded with different images, and, you know, you've got social media. And instead of using the word like authentic, you know, I have a bit of an issue with the word of authentic, overuse of it in the wellness world, is that, you know, you could still be true to yourself, you know, once you follow these core principles. And yes, it's amazing, you know, single important person method. So it doesn't matter even, you know, what relationship status you're in, if you're single or, you know, in a relationship, you matter as a person.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think sometimes when you're in a relationship, you forget about yourself, don't you?
Yes, Yes, I could relate to that because I remember when I started my Sophia World blog, and you know, I was describing early on, I came out of this long-term relationship and I felt, you know, a bit lost, you know, in the first couple of weeks, you know, after it ended, because I felt I was so used to having that person in my life. We go on holidays together. We have that routine on Friday where it was Chinese, was Friday takeaway or maybe fish and chips sometimes. Saturday, you know, for example, was doing a cleaning. So you know what I mean, Gabby. You know, you get into that routine where you're doing it with that other person in your life. And it's like, who am I? And although it's a bit painful, you know, especially when you're in a long-term relationship, or it could be marriage, or you know, such, or whatever your dynamics are, it could be hard, you know, when that ends, because as I said, there's a sense of grief. But it was also an opportunity for me to as well, because I remember before ending a relationship, my younger sister, who's, you know, quite wise, you know, person, I used to think maybe she should have been given the name Sophia, which means wise one. But, you know, I realized, you know, I am, you know, I have my internal, you know, I'm wise and intuitive myself. But one of the best pieces of advice my sister said to me is, you know what, you need to be on your own. And what she meant is I need to rediscover myself. And it was good because I returned back to my writing, because look, we might not be here today having this conversation if I didn't go for that route. And then, you know, for example, if I look back in terms of my life, different experiences. So I moved to Holland and then I ended up coming back, you know, it didn't go according to plan. But, you know, that was like an adventure I went on, you know, in terms of my life. And I learned, you know, that I can, you know, make this big type of change. So, you know, brilliant. It's kind of like gone full circle.
Yeah. We come to the end of the show. Sophia, if people want to find out more about your services or link in with you, where can people find you?
Okay, so they can find me on my HQ, which is Sophia World, and that is www.sophia, spelled with a silent PH, and then world, you know, like in globe.co.uk. And I also have a podcast which people could go back to, which was called The Go-Getter, which is available on that website. So they could reach out to me on Sophia World. And I'm also on Instagram too as well. So it's I Am Sophia Husbands UK. So it's a nice place to follow me because I will share, you know, different events and soon my manifesto and mini course guide is going to be available for people to guide, you know, download as a gift.
Brilliant. And thanks for coming on the show today.
Okay. Oh, it's so lovely to be here. And I hope that, you know, you enjoyed listening.
Definitely did. We definitely did. And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.